ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, ain't down? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. Oh, that's not Blank.
Lame.
That's Paul.
That's what we got?
That's what we got.
I was excited for Paul to do this, and he
barely... Did I do that?
Oh, that was half-assed.
He gave me a half-assed what up, H-Town. Jesus. Well, this is going to be nonsense for the next, I don't know, until Jeremy gets here. Jeremy Fancy Boy Branham. Kansas City for the Cougs. He'll be here at some point in the next, you know, 20-ish minutes. So I'm Joe George, hanging out with BMAC. Joel Blank's on vacation today. He'll be back tomorrow. So until Jeremy's here, Brian and I will discuss the Houston Texans. Because what an offseason it has been. It has been 2 days of nonsense. Of upset Texans fans, of excited Texans fans. But Nick Caserio, you know, has been making a ton of different moves so far this offseason that were... At first, it was Brian, I thought it was fair to be skeptical. Like, you see Grenard leave, you see Cashman leave, but every single player that's left in free agency, including Devin Singletary as well, the Texans have done a really good job of, you know, replacing those players with better players, players that are at a minimum on a better contract.
They got, yeah, you could say that. They definitely got better. Both a D-tackle, I assume, DeNico Autry is playing D-tackle, and then edge rusher with Danielle Hunter. But yeah, I think people that were disappointed day one, and not all of day one, because they certainly got some deals done towards the end of day one, but they were disappointed those first couple hours when the running back started going off the board. I think they were operating off of, you know, what's happened in the past, maybe taking some frustration on the Astros inactivity minus Josh Hader about, oh my God, here we go again. Houston team's not spending the money I want them to. Like, there's an inescapable PTSD in this town, and I say that as a native Houstonian who's lived here my entire life, that we always assume our teams are going to disappoint us. And sometimes that carries over in really ridiculous ways, and I think it did for the first couple hours of free agency the other day.
Yeah, and that's where it was just the first couple hours, right? It really was just day one of free agency.
It was up until, what, like 3 o'clock, maybe 4 o'clock when DeNico Autry signed?
Yeah.
And then Azeez signed just after the Killer Bees went off the air. It's right around 6 o'clock.
Yeah, and those were the first two moves that they made. Now, you know, during the Saquon stuff, as that all was unfolding, the Texans are not going to get him. You lose Devin Singletary, but then... You know, you acquired Joe Mixon yesterday. You signed Danielle Hunter. Like, you are in, it's not a big deal, but you replaced your punter. You brought in some low-level, potentially high-reward guys like Jeffrey Okuda. I can't hear you, Brian.
Oh, I said, that's my bad. I'm trying to send out the tweet while I'm also participating in the conversation. No, I just wanted to make sure you put that it was a championship-caliber punter. We can't forget that in the conversation.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. You know, two-time Super Bowl champion Tommy Townsend is now a Houston Texan. He is the championship Super Bowl culture that the Houston Texans need. But this is, you know, it's a good moment in Texans history at this time, because they are just headed in a positive direction as a team as a whole, with their coaching staff, with Bobby Slowick coming back. Pretty much everyone that has been brought in, you should be excited about. And everyone that's left, well, like, while it's disappointing, it's not... None of it's the end of the world. Now, the big news today that surprised me, and surprised many, it seems, was that the Texans traded Malik Collins to the San Francisco 49ers for a 7th-round pick. That move was very surprising, because I saw Jeremy's tweet yesterday that the defensive line was elite. With Autry, Collins, Anderson, and Hunter, you had an elite defensive line right there. And then to move on from Collins and what it looks like to be less than $3 million in cap savings does surprise me. It did immediately raise my antenna of there's got to be something else coming here.
Well, yeah, because, look, I think this what this tells us, and we heard DeMeco right after the season was over talk about, like, step one, thing one that he wanted to do this offseason was improve the defensive front. Like, he told you flat out that was the main thing he wanted to do. He also mentioned the running game as well. And I think this tells us that they don't view Malik Collins as a part of that improvement along the defensive front, because the Texans didn't get anything in return with the, either the seventh round pick or the, like, what, the $2.5 million in cap savings. They didn't get anything in return that would make it worth it to move along from a guy they thought was actually part of a dominant defensive front. To me, what this tells me is they don't view that he's on par with the rest of the guys they've added to that front, and they're looking to do better than Malik Collins. And this was an opportunity that if you wanted to move on from Malik Collins, at least you got something for him. Probably the cap savings is more important than the seventh round pick. But they didn't get enough in return for me to think that this was an actual like move to get what they got. This is a move because they don't view Collins as good enough.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a moment to get better for this team by moving on from Malik Collins. So we'll see what's next. By the way, it is officially time that the league year is open. So we are now getting tweets from the Eagles, and you know that Saquon Barkley signing is official. That the signing of Jonathan Greenard in Minnesota is official. So some of the stuff will officially start coming out, and we will also be able to get a better read on how much contract space is here for the Texans. But it sounds like Jeremy Branham is here. Hello, Jeremy.
What are you guys talking about? What are you all talking about?
We're talking about Danielle Hunter and Malik Collins.
How do you feel about the Malik Collins trade? Well, I heard a little bit of Brian, what he had to say there. I agree with Brian. Like, this is something that, to me, is a precursor for something else. You're not trading Malik Collins for a seventh-round pick and what was it, like $2.5, $3 million of cap savings?
Yeah, $2.5 million.
If you don't have something else already planned. Like, they have something else up their sleeve. Like, something else is coming down the pike. You're not making this trade for a seventh-rounder to save $2.5 million if you didn't. And like, Malik Collins probably isn't going to take a backup spot, like, too kindly, and you don't want to pay a backup the money that you're going to be paying Malik Collins type of deal. Because if you were just fully in the saving money aspect, you would save money on Robert Woods, right? $5 million. Maybe you'd save money on Jimmy Ward, $4 million. So to me, it's more they have somebody in mind to be their starting defensive tackle alongside with Autry, and we just haven't seen that domino fall just yet.
Yeah, I did think that it was going to happen quickly. I don't know how you felt about it, but when the trade happened, I kind of assumed that what you're saying was going to quickly follow within an hour or two. So
if it's Eric Armstead, he didn't become officially released until what, 3 or 4 o'clock?
Yeah, so he should be officially cut at this point any minute now. But I mean, I guess they could technically already have a deal in place for him if he wasn't cut yet. So
they're allowed to legally tamper now. So I mean, yeah. they were illegally tampering for weeks, and now you can legally tamper. So they might have had a deal done before he. I mean, look. If Eric Armstead's like, hey, San Francisco, could you grant me my release?
Yeah.
You think there's a pretty decent chance he might already know where his next team's at?
Yeah, probably.
Let's be honest.
Yeah,
let's
be
for real.
They all know.
I think it's possible that it's him. And I don't think that we should be – like, the Houston Texans are going to have three new starting defensive linemen next year. And whenever we finished the season and D'Amico Ryans was like, hey, guys, we're going to try to be better in the front, it's like – okay, kind of like a head-scratching comment. You know, we thought they were pretty good, right? Will Anderson had a really good rookie year. John Greenard had 12.5 sacks, a career high. Okay, that's pretty good. And then you had Rankins and Collins in the middle. Okay, that's pretty good. Like, D'Amico's saying that you need to improve off that. That's pretty good. Maybe we had our bar too low, because they're going to have three starting defensive linemen that are different than your starters in 2023. The only holdover is going to be Will Anderson. You got Hunter as the opposite defensive end, and you're going to have two new defensive tackles. And we should have seen this coming. Like, we act like we're surprised because, okay, Greenard's gone, Hunter's in. You make the trade today. You sign Autry. Maybe you're going to have another defensive tackle. We're all like, whoa, I didn't see this coming. Didn't D'Amico say this was coming? Didn't D'Amico Ryan say this is what we're doing?
We saw this. It was part of the reason when we heard D'Amico say that they wanted to improve the defensive front in the running game, why we took him seriously, because they basically tipped their hand last year when it came to quarterback. It was the same sort of deal where they told you basically right up front, not even really disguising in any way exactly what they're going to do. And so, yeah, you look at this defensive front, and I don't think it's any surprise that Will Anderson's the only remaining guy, because I think they saw what happened in that Baltimore game, especially in the second half, and part of the Indianapolis game in Week 18 until they figured out late in the third quarter, where they just got pushed around. So as much as we like a defense that ranked, I believe, sixth against the run last year, D'Amico clearly saw from, with his own eyes, his own expertise, that they needed improvement, and Yeah, they definitely went out and did it. The only guy remaining is the guy you spent with a third overall pick on.
I guess I'm naive. I thought that they would replace one or two of the guys, mainly one guy. I thought we would see an improvement on the interior, and then I always assumed Grenard. I still assumed Grenard was going to come back.
I think that was the assumption everybody was making.
Yeah,
like I mean, that's the assumption I was making. I wasn't on board with Grenard back. I just didn't feel like they were going to pay him the money that he was seeking. But you think of that as a loss, right? It's like, okay, well, if you're losing Grenard, who's a $19 million a year player who has 12 and a half sacks, you actually feel like you're going to drop off at that position. And it's like, well, you better improve at one of the defensive tackle spots enough to compensate for what you're losing at D end. Now, they made the huge splash yesterday where they actually upgraded. I think they have a much better player who's a little bit more multifaceted, has a better resume than Grenard, even though Grenard had the career year. I think we just have to, whenever D'Amico Ryans does give us the few things that he gives us, that we have to take him seriously. And the other thing is, this is why you can't get lost in the stats. Like, you can't get lost in the statistics and be like, well, they had the ninth best run defense in the NFL. And I'm not mocking you, Brian, because you've been, you know, let's
sounds like you're taking
line.
A shot at my voice there.
No, I really wasn't. That was just like how I view the general population of fans. But it's like, hey, you know, they're this good at this thing. Like, they don't need to improve here. Well, their strength of schedule wasn't great. The three teams that tore them apart were, well, Indy twice and Baltimore once. Indy's in their division. Maybe he's going to be the team that competes with the Texans for the top spot in the AFC South for the next 10 years. And then Baltimore was what you're thriving to be. Like, you're trying to be a contender in the AFC. So, like, the three good teams that you play, they destroyed you on the ground. And it's like, well, you know, maybe they looked more at that. Like, hey, we don't have the pieces here to compete with this type of running game, whether it's Indy, whether it's Baltimore. I point to the firing in San Francisco, getting rid of their defensive coordinator. Well, they were top five in defense. Well, maybe they weren't very good, though. Maybe they're top five in defense, but they have the number one defensive personnel in all of football. Is that underachieving? Is that good coaching? Is that bad coaching? Like, we throw these stats out there as a way to define what something is, when quite frankly, it isn't. Like, there's a lot of different variables that come into play. You point out the Texans being good against the run. Well, D'Amico Ryans didn't think they were good against the run. Do you believe the stats, or do you believe D'Amico Ryans?
You got to trust D'Amico. And part of it, I wonder, Jeremy, if they look at the way we look at them last year of they didn't have this great schedule. They didn't play this like the best teams in the NFL. And even though, yes, their stats, to your point, sometimes indicate that they're in the top 10 or top 11 in some defensive categories, that they knew that when they look at their future schedule, not just this year, but in the years coming, that they're going to play much more talented teams than they played in the 2023 season. And that's why they had so much work to do. I love what they've done. I think they've had an absolutely incredible offseason. Every player they've lost, I like the replacement more. The only one that I would rather not have the conversations about Joe Mixon. I wish they would have signed someone like Aaron Jones and get the same quality of player without the baggage that's attached to him. But I love what the Texans have done this offseason just through 2 days. And I'm fascinated what's next, because there's clearly at least one more interesting thing that's going to happen before the draft.
Would you still love it if they don't sign what you would consider capable starting defensive tackle? Because we think that there's another move coming. I think it's obvious. But we also thought that whenever the Astros traded Miles Straw to the Guardians — they weren't the Guardians at the time, but I want to be PC today — and they got Yiner Diaz and Phil Maton back, and there's got to be something else, right? Nope, there wasn't anything else. Chaz just slides over, and then you call up Jake Myers. If they don't bring in a starting defensive tackle, and this was just, I don't know, maybe they don't like Collins in this defense or whatever, would you still feel the same way?
It depends on what happens after the draft. Because to me, Jeremy, it's defensive tackle and cornerback of like your starting 22 or your two weakest spots right now. Okuda is not your starting corner, or he shouldn't be your starting corner, across from Stingley. So if you leave the draft and you haven't drafted a good corner and signed a good defensive tackle, I would be upset. Or vice versa. Like, you can't not fill both those spots between free agency and the draft in the first round, in my view. So while I'm good with it right now, I would be, if they don't do that next thing and then don't take like a Jerzon Newton, I would be disappointed for sure. Because it seems like a big hole in their offense or defense.
We do forget that they signed Fuli Fatukasi.
That's
defensive
true.
Tackle from Jacksonville.
And
like, they kind of overlooked that they signed him. Yeah, Heinisch, like, I don't think anybody considers Heinisch necessarily a starting capable defensive tackle. Like, we look at him as more depth, and they also brought back Davis, which I think is more depth. I think that there's something coming, but we do kind of forget that they did sign this defensive tackle, Foley Fatukasi.
You said it better than me.
Well, I'm looking at a Pro Football Reference and his pronunciation guide.
What about DJ Reader?
His full name is Folu Rancho Fatukasi, but they call him Foley, so that makes it easy for guys like us.
Would you be any interested in DJ Reader at all?
He interests me, but he's coming off of, what, his second major surgery to his quad? Different quads, but Eric Armstead would move my needle. I'm not sure Reader moves my needle at this point.
Well, the San Francisco 49ers just officially released him 54 seconds ago, so he's officially free to be a Houston Texan now, Jeremy.
That'll be something that we're watching throughout the show today. We've had some breaking news the last couple of days. So more on this Malik Collins trade. Who's your other starting defensive tackle? Is there a theory out there? Brian, did you get to your theory?
No, I haven't got to it yet. I've saved it just for you, Jeremy.
I thought you might, but I wasn't 100% sure. Sometimes you can be selfish like that. I'm kidding. All right, we'll get to Brian's theory on that. More on the Malik Collins trade, saving $2.5 million. Just caught us off guard, no doubt about this. Does it show you confidence in Autry? Who's the starting defensive tackle opposite of him? What's Brian's theory? And does this mean there's more on tap today for the Houston Texans? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. We're on ESPN Houston on YouTube as well. Just search ESPN Houston. You can find us there. On Twitter, Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
No blankers today. Where is blankers today? Wrong answers only. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line.
Probably going to catch up on something. We know that about him.
At least three times, because he's eating at least three times. Breakfast, he's going to put eggs.
And you've worked with blankers, obviously, longer than I have. There was a day we were out, it was out in Cyprus. I think it was the Cyprus Trail.
Trail hideout, yeah.
And Blankers got a loaded baked potato and put ketchup on the damn thing. And I was thoroughly disgusted. But I was curious, of all his weird food habits, was that the worst of the worst, or does it get even worse than that?
I mean, I've heard him talk about things that I wouldn't ever think of, but in terms of like seeing something, that's probably the weirdest thing I've seen him do.
Yeah, ketchup but on a loaded baked potato from a barbecue joint.
Yeah. He's mentioned other things that I'm like, that's worse than the potato, but I don't really remember off the top of my head. But 713-780-3776, where's Blankers today? Wrong answers only. Brian filling in for Blankers, pulling double duty today because he's talent. I'm really curious about your theory here. Texans trading Malik Collins for a seventh, insignificant. It's not so much the what you got in return, very much like the Mixon deal. This is somebody wanted to get rid of somebody. Instead of flat out releasing, cutting them, they get a seventh rounder. I think you get cap savings on that somehow,
yeah,
with a trade,
two,
not a release.
Texans cap on Twitter said they'll get about $2.55 million in cap savings for this
year. I meant trading a guy just in general instead of releasing a guy.
Sure.
I think it
it's
saves you money somehow.
Like
I don't know how.
I mean, obviously, very different player, very different background, but it's essentially what the Bengals did with Joe Mixon. And you didn't get really anything for him in return, but you were going to release him anyway, so you get a little something in return instead of getting nothing, absolutely nothing when you release him.
Yeah, so same type of deal. So you've been saying that you have a theory about what this could mean in the draft, and I've been waiting to hear this. What is your theory on what this could mean in the draft?
Okay, so when we reacted in the moment to Danico Autry getting signed by the Texans, I think all our initial thoughts was, okay, because obviously at this point Danielle Hunter hadn't signed yet. We thought, okay, maybe Autry is playing on the outside as an edge rusher. Obviously the Hunter signing happens, and we instantly have to come to the conclusion that no, actually Autry's going to play on the inside. But it leads you it led me to the thought of, well, if Autry is not a prototypical defensive tackle, and now you've also gotten rid of Malik Collins on top of that, you're kind of left thin, not only in your depth, but in just physical size along your defensive line, in the interior of the defensive line. So my thought is, I still think, like we talked about yesterday, they're going corner in round one, probably. Well, they'll let best player fall to them. But if they had their pick of everyone, if they had it fall the way they wanted to, they're going to go corner in the first round. I now think we've talked about his teammate at Texas, Byron Murphy, but I now think that the Texans look to go with a massive defensive tackle, and there's no more massive defensive tackle available in this draft than Tavondre Sweat at 365 pounds. That is, to me, a perfect cure for a defensive line that might be undersized, especially in the interior. Maybe you can get away with being undersized across the defensive line, especially with Danico Autry, a defensive tackle, if you're now pairing him with somebody like Tavondre Sweat at 365 pounds in the second round of the draft after you get corner in the first round.
Yeah, we've heard that he's not necessarily a scheme fit in a 4-3, that he might be better as a nose tackle in a 3-4. But look, I'm going to trust D'Amico Ryans if he drafts him. Like, okay, like you got a vision. I believe in your vision. I'm not ruling out your theory as something that's plausible. It could very well come out to be true. I don't like it. And the reason that I don't like it is because I don't want to enter the draft needing a certain position at all. If you're a playoff caliber team, Texans are. If you're a team that has Super Bowl aspirations, maybe the Texans got there. I don't think you can enter the draft, especially when you're picking 23, of like, okay, we need to have this position. That's why the Malik Collins trade, if you don't have another move in free agency before the draft, to me is really very curious. I'm fine giving the Texans a window of time here to allow for that second domino to fall.
Window,
I think that is coming. Yeah, my bad. Yeah, definitely not a window. Hope Nick Caserio's not listening. But I don't want to enter the draft with like, okay, here's my depth chart. Here's my starting 22. Here's my two deep. Two deep not as important because you're going to draft rookies that are part of your two deep. But I don't want you to go into the draft with your starting lineup and be like, we have to have a defensive tackle. Because if you know that, every other team knows that. It makes it very difficult to get that position. Teams are trying to trade ahead of you. You might be, you know, held over the barrel where you have to trade ahead of somebody. So I'm not a fan of the theory, not ruling out that this could be where the Houston Texans' logic lies.
Yeah, maybe that is some of my Longhorn fandom coming out. But getting aside from the specific name of Tavondre Sweat, and I mean, I'll stand by it. I still think the idea of it holds, maybe not going into the draft, having to get that guy, but you know, look, I have to look at the actual available defensive tackles still. I still think you could see whoever they decide to pair, and maybe this is why they let Malik Collins go, because they didn't view him as this guy, but whoever they decide to pair a defensive tackle next to a guy like Danico Autry, who they might not view as a prototypical defensive tackle in terms of his height and his weight, maybe they pair that Danico Autry with the defensive tackle that is not a 3-4 nose tackle, but someone that's beefier, someone that could be a two-gap type of guy. Mm-hmm. That way, Danico Autry is freed more to get up the field, while this bigger, beefier defensive tackle can alleviate some of that pressure by taking up more real estate than they were doing with their defensive tackles last year.
That's the thing that I'm curious about with Eric Armstead, too. Hey, look, I don't know what the Texans have planned at that other defensive tackle spot. You know, my guess is as good as anybody's guess. I like your theory. You know, it makes for good fodder. Eric Armstead's kind of similar to the same type of player that Danico Autry is, where Armstead played edge in a 3-4 defense, and then last year in a 4-3 kind of played that defensive tackle spot. But is he that big run-stopping defensive tackle that you want alongside Autry? Are Eric Armstead and Danico Autry too similar to where you can start them both in a four-man line? So, like, that's a question
that
I have.
That is a concern.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I think as excited as we are about what this defensive line will do as far as getting to the quarterback, you do have to be concerned. Like, Will Anderson is not a huge defensive end. Obviously, Danico Autry, an undersized defensive tackle at this point, and we don't know who the other defensive tackle is starting next to Danico Autry at this point. So I think you do have to have the concern, especially while we don't, I guess, even know who's going to be playing middle linebacker for the Houston Texans. We can all take a guess at this point. But I think you have to be a little concerned about, okay, the pass rush definitely got better. They improved across the board as far as their pass rush. But, I mean, part of D'Amico's concern going into the offseason was the defensive front and being able to stop the run, seeing what happened against the Colts, seeing what happened against the Ravens. And I don't know if we have an answer as to if they've actually fixed that yet.
Huh, that's an interesting point. I think that they've improved the defensive front four.
Overall.
Now, there's still – yeah, but there's still one glaring hole. Like,
right.
To me, it's
to
not –
to me, that's why that guy needs to be – like, I'm not – I'm usually against – is amongst starters getting specialists, especially in football.
Sure.
I mean, you have to do everything out there, but I wouldn't mind them getting a quote unquote run stuffing specialist for that defensive tackle next to DeNico Autry, just because it doesn't view, and I haven't seen Hunter's grade as far as stopping the run, but it doesn't seem like they have many run stuffing specialists along that defensive front. There are more guys that tend to lean to the pass rushing side than the run stopping side.
Yeah, I wonder if that's by design. I wonder if it's either, like, we still have the domino of, hey, we want another run stopper, or it's we want to create havoc on quarterbacks. And, look, I'll be honest with you. I don't know a whole lot about Foley Fatukusi's game. Like, maybe he's 6'4", 318 is not, like, a massive human being, but 318 is pretty wide.
It's bigger than Autry.
Yeah, it's bigger than Autry. So maybe this is, like, his role. Maybe he's their starter. Maybe he's their starter, and we're just overlooking it.
I mean, I guess I can't rule it out. I would hope, though, at least if he's being considered for the job, I hope it's only being considered for the job. Maybe if they add somebody and it goes into being a camp battle, I could get behind that. But I'd feel a little uneasy if their Texans are basically penciling him in as a starter right now, currently.
Why would you say that?
I mean...
Do you know anything about his game? Well, about his game.
I know, and the unknown is what's scary. Like, to me, and look, maybe this is my own lack of research on the topic, but if he was some run-stuffing, can't-miss specialist who could be the guy that we're hoping the Texans have to next to DeNico Autry, I think his name would be more known to us coming into the Texans.
Well, I agree with that. Like, I agree with that, but a lot of times we don't really know these massive human beings that play in the middle of a 4-3 that aren't collecting stats.
Did we dare look up his Pro Football Focus grade?
I did. It was 61 this past season.
Eh,
it's not good.
That's
last
not great.
Year was 44.5, even worse. The year before that it was 61.5.
Okay.
2020 though was an 80. It was an 80 in 2020.
Now is that the overall grade or the run stopping grade?
I don't pay for Pro Football Focus. So I only
that's
get the
fair.
Overall grade. Yeah, I'm not paying
fair.
For Pro Football Focus.
No, I wouldn't
me?
Either.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. So, yeah, I think it's an incomplete on the question, though. Have the Texans improved the defensive front? I'm going to go yes, actually. I'm going to say yes. Even if it's Foley, my guy Foley Fatukasi, even if he's –
You're putting your guy on him?
Even if he's my – yeah, because I'm the one that's actually advocating from him being a starting defensive tackle.
He's got the only Branham endorsement. I like that.
He's got the Branham endorsement. So Branham endorsement for Foley. I'm just going to call him Foley from now on.
Every time you say Foley,
he's though, Mrs. Foley's
Mick.
Baby boy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to think Mick every time you say
he's
that.
Mrs. Foley's baby boy. Even if he's the starting defensive tackle, I'm not ruling out that they're done with defensive tackle, but even if he is the starting defensive tackle, I think they've improved their defensive front, and I think that they've improved the ability to stop the run as well. I'm willing to go there.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair because I think it's universal. Hunter is an upgrade over Gennard, and DeNico Autry on the inside as a pass rusher, at least, is far better than any interior pass rusher they've had maybe in team history. I can't think of a great interior defensive pass rusher that they've had on this team.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Who do you think's the starting defensive tackle opposite of Autry? If it's not Mrs. Foley's baby boy. Also, what's left to do for the offseason for the Houston Texans? We like the Danielle Hunter. We like a lot of the moves that they made. I like Alshire quite a bit. I think it's a shrewd pickup for the Houston Texans. But what's left to do for this offseason? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
No Blankers today. It's Brian in for Blankers today. I'm still Branham, though. 713-780-ESPN. Wrong answers only. Where's Blankers today? 3311. Blankers is competing against Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins in a three-point contest.
I take Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, no doubt. Would Blankers be able to use the woman's ball, though? Which is smaller.
Yeah, I think
everybody knows that.
Do they? Maybe.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm
I don't know
if they do.
I knew it, but I couldn't tell you like how much smaller it is.
It's not much. I mean, you can. It's like if you look at the specs, you wouldn't think that it's much smaller. But whenever you hold it, I think it's pretty noticeable. Quite a bit noticeable, actually. Virginia says Blankers is shopping for a new Nike hat. Does have quite the collection.
Yeah, I imagine he's got a closet full of them at home.
Yep, he does. 713-780-ESPN. So you made somebody's day as well, Brian?
Oh, I did.
4106, the song y'all just came in on. This was the previous segment, though. Is the song my song picked for his T-ball walk-up song.
Oh, nice.
Awesome. That's cool. I'm questioning some things if you have T-ball walk-up songs.
Well, yeah, well, there's two things that popped in my mind. One, like you said, walk-up songs for T-ball, that's a bit much. And two, I mean, credit to the kid, but, I mean, how old is T-ball? Like 8, 9 years old and he's listening to Motley
Crue? Probably younger than that. I bet it was probably like 5 or 6.
Okay, again, then he's picking Motley Crue?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I didn't put hopefully two and two together on that.
Hopefully he didn't watch the Netflix special on Motley Crue.
His parents have good taste. 2484 might be apples to oranges. Aren't the Chiefs going into the draft with a glaring need? What is their glaring need? Is it corner?
Wide receiver?
Because they're going to trade? Well, they just won 2 Super Bowls without a wide receiver.
I know.
Is that a glaring need?
Right. So you could argue they have no glaring needs, obviously, because
exactly.
They won a Super Bowl. But if you had to pick out a need, I would say it's wide receiver. I like Rashee Rice, but they don't really have much else.
Yeah, I just don't think it's a glaring need. I think we overstate that. Like, oh,
that's
the
fair.
Chiefs need a receiver. They have the worst receiving core in the NFL since they traded Tyreek. Sweet.
Back-to-back
they've
Super
won
Bowls.
2 Super Bowls in the 2 years since they've traded Tyreek. So how much of a hole is that really? So I would say that their glaring needs corner, like once
yeah,
they trade
Al'Darius
Sneed, if they do.
True.
Yeah. 713-780-3776. So apparently Pauly did the what up H-Town, hey, how we doing to start the show?
Yeah, he did it, but
you're
going to hear it in a second. It wasn't
I'll grade
good.
It a little bit later on in the show?
Yeah, we'll have to play it sometime during the show because it was not good. You got to grade the call.
Okay, that sounds very good. The guy said 3, 4, 5-year-olds for their T-ball. Dad refusing Cocoa Melon. We're musically cultured over here. That's why you got to teach them, though. You got to teach them early. You really do. I like that.
Well, that's good parenting. If it was the choice was Motley Crue or Cocoa Melon, you did a good job.
I don't even know what Cocoa Melon is. I'm not going to lie to you. No,
yeah,
I have no idea.
My kid's not really into it, but it's basically like an animated kid show where they sing kid songs.
I know all about Miss Rachel and... You know, I know Miss Rachel. I don't know. I've never heard of Cocoa Melon.
Yeah, I don't know Miss Rachel. She like
it sounds
YouTube?
Like a. It sounds like a pair of comfortable pants. Cocoa Melon does. 713-780-3776. Yeah, Miss Rachel's she's basically a babysitter. She really is. She's a virtual babysitter. That's how I describe Miss Rachel. All right, 713-780-3776. What's left to do this offseason for the Texans? Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Nino, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Nino?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, man. Heard your question there. Listening to you in Louisville, Kentucky, too, by the way. I think they nailed it, you know, obviously with the quarterback, defensive end. This offseason, yeah, you did good. Keep building up the line, putting beef on the line, and now you got a running back to relieve C.J. Stroud. So I think there's another piece left, real important piece, I think. And I think they need a true, maybe bona fide number one receiver that can at least, you know, win routes and get open consistently. I don't think Nico can get open consistently like some of these other guys. I'm thinking a T. Higgins. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that, man? I'm going to hang up in this. Great show.
Appreciate that. Thank you. I don't think T. Higgins is realistic. I don't think that the Texans are interested in trading, using top draft capital to trade for Higgins and then pay him that money. Nick Caserio has already unwarranted brought up Nico Collins' name without being asked about potentially locking him up to an extension prior, but it's on his mind. So I don't think he's going to pay top receiver money for a T. Higgins and then also have to trade for him and then also have in the back of his mind that he wants to sign and lock up Nico Collins. There was an interesting name, two interesting names that came available today, Mike Williams and Hunter Renfrow. Now, I don't know if these guys are necessarily fitting into that you know, that the player that he was describing. I like both of them. Like, Hunter Renfro's more of a fit, I think, in terms of, like, a slot guy that can create space, run good routes. Although, I think the Chargers use Mike Williams quite a bit in the slot, just as a bigger slot guy. I'm real curious, with the addition of bringing back Noah Brown, I don't see the Houston Texans adding another free agent wide receiver, period. I think the earliest they could add another receiver to this roster is in the draft, because you have six under contract right now, with Nico, with Tank, with Woods, with Noah Brown, with Hutchinson, with Mechie. I just don't see them adding another free agent wide receiver.
Yeah, and specifically the T. Higgins, I just think it's too cost prohibitive, because you're probably giving up, I mean, I would say at least a third-round pick, probably a second-round pick to get the trade done. And then on top of that, you have to pay him, you know, a market contract. I mean, I guess you could technically bring him in and not pay him and let him go next year, but then you're dealing with an unhappy wide receiver. So I don't think that's really that option really isn't even worth discussing. So I would not do that. I think it's too much. It's too many assets diverted to the wide receiver position, especially since I'd rather pay Nico anyway. And even if you do have T. Higgins here and he's happy just playing out the string and getting to free agency next year, I think he and Nico Collins are too similar wide receiver. I mean, I guess you could put them both on the outside with Tank on the inside of the slot. But Tank looked last year like a very, very capable outside receiver. I just view it as a bit redundant, and you could use those resources, I'd rather them use those resources on improving things like corner and defensive tackle.
Yeah, Tank played more boundary receiver last year than slot, as you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we overrated at times in this offense, though, because like the San Francisco scheme and the Slowick scheme, they like to move their receivers around. So I think we put too much weight in slot and boundary. Like, if you had two really good boundary receivers, then okay, then you're going to find a guy who's going to play the slot. I think we overvalue it, but agree on all the fronts about T. Higgins. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Jason, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Jason?
Well, man, I ain't going to lie to you. I stole my thunder. I was going to bring up those two names. So I guess all I got to say, fellas, is I love the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it, Jason. Blankers likes those calls more than I do. Hey, I love you guys. But thank you. Thank you. I'm just uncomfortable with compliments. Hey, thanks. We like you, too. I've never met you.
That makes you like LeBron. I mean, Branham and LeBron, they're the same thing.
LeBranham. Thank you for the call, though, Jason. 713-780-3776. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Greg, you're in the hive of the bees. What's going on, Greg?
Hey, guys. I'm kind of new to your show, enjoying it. Appreciate what y'all do. I have a question and a comment. The comment on the guy that's filling in for blank today, interior pass rusher, not named J.J. Watt, Texans history. How about Antonio Smith? He made a Pro Bowl in Houston. Heck of a player.
I wouldn't view him as interior, though. Jeremy, you may disagree with me. I don't view him as an interior pass rusher.
Well, he's more of a 3-4 end, wasn't he? So, like,
yeah, he was a 3-4 end, and they, along with Watt, who they would move guys inside on, you know, on nickel packages, the four down, basically four. Antonio Smith would move inside in some of those third down packages, but I wouldn't view him as a quote-unquote interior pass rusher.
Yeah, guys, he played five technique in the hybrid 3-4 and then would bump even more inside in their sub packages. That's an interior pass rusher.
Yeah, I think that those are good points, Greg. Appreciate the call.
It's not completely unfair, but even then, Antonio Smith, while I think everyone loved him, he was a great personality. What was his season high in sacks, like 6 or 7? It wasn't like he was an amazing world beater pass rusher. DeNico Autry beat that number last season.
Yeah, I think Greg's point was more that, hey, Antonio Smith was one of the better interior pass rushers they've had in Texans history. You should include him
sure,
in that conversation.
That's fair.
Not that he's
I still think the point stands that DeNico Autry might already be the best pass rusher from an interior position, though, in team history, unless you're including Juan in that.
Yeah, I mean, Pro Football Reference doesn't, like, do a great job of listing. I mean, they list their position, but you have no idea what the defense they played. Like,
sure.
You just pulled up a random name.
It just listens, like, it lists the default position, essentially.
Yeah, like, I'm okay including a 3-4 end as an interior rusher.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point.
He's not Vince Wilfork, but okay. Like, that's why I kind of get annoyed with the labels of, and I understand that you have to have like a 5-tech and a 3-tech and all of this stuff on a defense, but it's becoming more positionless now than ever in the NFL. Like, go look at these, like, look at Deebo Samuel, look at look how the Texans would use Nico Collins on in rounds. The Texans lined up Tank Dell at fullback a couple of plays last year. So, like, it's becoming super positionless. Like, yeah, you can have your left tackle.
It is becoming more and more like the NBA in the label of being positionless. And, I mean, Antonio Smith, I mean, yeah, that was, I mean, how long ago was that now? So that's certainly not even, quote-unquote, today's NFL. That's going back 7-8 years at this point. But he was a guy that played all across the field. He did definitely line up inside in those sub packages. I just don't remember seeing Antonio Smith on a routine basis, or certainly in a base package, being a guy who was taking on guards and centers rushing the passer. More often, he was taking on tackles.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Where's Blankers today? Wrong answers only. XX Ron. I like that name. Blankers is interviewing to be the new voice of the Cougs. I like that name, but delete your account. 713-780-3776. Why is Blankers not here? Wrong answers only. What's left to do for the offseason? Brian didn't say his. I didn't say mine. We have plans, too. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. And if you're a business, you should have plans to call up HR&P. Mike Holly, go Cougs, U of H class of 1990. He used to protect Heisman Trophy winners. We protected one winner. Now he wants to protect you and your business. They've been protecting businesses over at HRMP for nearly 25 years now. Going to be 3 decades before we know it. HRMP provides comprehensive human capital management services, including HR compliance, benefits administration, and payroll. HRMP will also work with you to customize a plan for whatever you need. There's nothing cookie cutter about HRMP. If you need a little help, a lot of help, anything in between, HRMP will create a plan for what you and your business needs. Also, their customer service, second to none, second to nobody. You'll never talk to a stranger on the other side of the line. You'll be calling someone that is familiar with you, familiar with your company. I can speak to that customer service anytime I have a question. I always get a quick response that's easy to understand. Let HRMP take on the demands of human resources and eliminate your HR burden so you can get back to growing your business. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HRMP customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525 or check them out at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No, Blankers today. It's Brian in for Blankers. Blankers out today. Why is he gone? Wrong answers only. 713-780-3776. Blankers is casting for the documentary LeBron, The Decision. No, LeBranum, The Decision. I screwed it up. Blankers is casting for the documentary LeBranum, The Decision. Blankers.
Where are you taking your talents to? That begs the question.
ESPN 975.
There you go.
Or Kansas City. Blankers is name dropping at Starbucks trying to get a free latte.
I could
see that.
Is that
something Blankers would, you think he would do that?
He would certainly tell the Starbucks barista that he's wanting to golf with Charles Barkley. I think we've heard that story many times.
No,
you don't think so?
He's capable of doing both of these things. Name dropping, sure. Trying to get a free latte, sure. I don't think he would do them in connection.
How much prompting do you think it would take for him to get there? Because I don't think it would take
little.
A lot. Like, oh, you're wearing a Rocket little. Shirt. Yeah, I used to work for him. I did tell you about that time I golfed with Charles Barkley. Like, that's as little setup as I think it takes.
He's going to be mad at you.
That's fine.
713-780-3776. We've liked the Texans offseason to date. The Collins trade today, a little bit of a head-scratcher. You know, we're gonna be patient. We're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, just like you should have after day one going into day two. But what do you think's left to do this offseason, Brian?
There's really two things to me. I would like for the Texans to add in a corner. We talked about this Monday, when all these names started coming in, like the Mike Fords and the Jeff Okudas. They added a bunch of corners that, while they might be good depth, they might be nice fourth and fifth guys in the position room, I don't view any of them as starters next to Derek Stingley. So if we're trying to avoid the Texans going into the draft with a glaring hole as among their starting 22, I think you have to look at corner, and also think you have to look at left guard. I don't mind there being a competition there at left guard, but I don't really want Juice Scruggs starting at guard. I prefer him as a center. So, you're looking at the remaining names, especially Kenyon Green. I don't really feel comfortable banking on any of those guys. So I'd at least like the Texans to bring in some more competition, but really, preferably, in a dream scenario, bring in an actual starter.
713-780-3776. What do you think the Texans need to get better? I like those answers. I'm curious, before I get into mine, what position do you think you can upgrade better? Cornerback two or your second free safety spot? Because, I mean, the Texans kind of interchange their two safeties. They don't really go free strong. They kind of move them all around. So corner two, safety two.
I would say safety two. There's still a lot of pretty big name safeties out on the free agent market. I know you and I have both talked about liking Cameron Curl, who's with the Washington Commanders the last couple years. He's still available. I'd give a call to Quandre Diggs, who was with Seattle, made a couple Pro Bowls there. And then Justin Simmons, who was a cap casualty from the Denver Broncos, also been a guy that's played pretty well during his career. I'd at least give all three of those guys a call and try to get them in and have a nice trio with Petrie and Jimmy Ward.
I guess the best way to ask the question is, are you more comfortable giving snaps to Jeff Okugba or Jimmy Ward?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I'd be more comfortable.
You flipped
it on me.
It's really the same question.
It is. But that's an interesting way to phrase it, because you're right. I would be more comfortable giving Jimmy Ward snaps. I just view the names at safety as far as the remaining free agents as better names, so that's where I went. Because corner, you're looking at the remaining corners. I mean, Stephon Gilmore, Xavier Howard. I don't really have a lot of interest in some of the more well-known names. I'd rather go with a guy in the draft, but when you flip it like that, I guess I'd have to go with corner.
See, I'm actually the opposite. I think I'd rather see Okudah out there. It's more the talent than the production. Like Jimmy Ward's production the last three to five years. Yeah. Okudah's production's not been there. Jimmy Ward has had the production. This is more talent, and it's like, okay, well, they identified this guy in free agency as somebody they wanted. Maybe there's something there that they see in their defense that they're good about. I know they felt the same way about Jimmy Ward a year ago, but then we saw Jimmy Ward play under this scheme. And it was more injury and the fact that he's old, as opposed to, like, you know, I think this guy sucks. I don't think he sucks. I just think he's, you know, injury prone, and I think he's a little bit older, and I like to play young football players. So I think that safety's still a position that you should be looking to upgrade, because I do think it's an oversaturated market, and I think you can wait it out and actually sign a pretty good safety for a very reasonable deal. I don't know if they're going to sign another starting capable corner. Like, you brought in Okudah. I think he's going to compete for that second corner spot and probably against a rookie. But fine. Like, if you want to improve there, I'm not going to be mad at that. I'm also curious about the third linebacker spot. Like, you have Christian Harris. You signed Al Shire. The Texans played a ton of nickel last year in the second half of the season, but they didn't in the first half. I think that D'Amico wants to play 4-3, like, as much as he possibly can, as opposed to playing a lot of nickel. I don't know if you have that third linebacker on this team that you're in love with. Like, Henry To'o to me is not a starting linebacker. I think he's a fine piece as a backup. Hansen's not a starting linebacker. The guy you signed, he's more of a special teams guy than a starter. I think you can upgrade that third linebacking spot a little bit better. Obviously, defensive tackle with today's trade. And I know you signed Mixon, but I'm still in the market for another veteran free agent that can complement Mixon, not start over Mixon, but complement Mixon, because I think you need another veteran running back as well.
Yeah, I like all those, because I agree with you. I don't really want Damian Pierce factoring into the running back conversation. So if that's going to be the case, you need to add another veteran running back to Joe Mixon and then still probably draft one, maybe the fourth or fifth round to fill out that room. Yep. Linebacker, though, I get your point. You got two names there, and you really have a lot of question mark as to who your third linebacker is, but it's not as big of a concern to me because of what you pointed out at the start of that point that you made, in that not just the Texans, it's league-wide. Most teams spend two-thirds of their times in nickel anyway, where you're only playing two linebackers. So it's definitely something that could be addressed, but if I'm trying to maybe rank my priorities as far as what I'm willing to allocate funds to in this offseason before we get to the draft, I'm putting corner and I'm putting safety and I'm putting offensive guard ahead of linebacker.
Fair enough. Because, I mean, yeah, you're going to play, like, you know, 60% nickel.
At best. Right. And that's probably trending up towards 70%.
I mean, last year's second half, once Desmond King took over for Tavier Thomas, they played 95% nickel.
I'm not kidding. 70% would be on the low side.
Like he would play 95% of the snaps, Desmond King, and they brought him back. So, like, you know, are you comfortable with Desmond King playing 95% of the snaps? Like, I mean, ideally they want to get him down to like 70%, but are you comfortable with him being one of your starting 11 that much?
Yeah, I'm.
I am. Quite frankly, I'm okay with that.
And I wonder though if this is part of how DeMeco has envisioned remaking his defense, because by investing in the defensive front, and obviously they need a big. In my opinion, I'll go back to my Tavondre Sweat theory, but they need a big, beefy interior defensive lineman to put next to DeNico Autry. But if you've got those sort of resources in your defensive line, a defensive line that's as star-studded as we think it's going to be headed into the season, then maybe you view them being able to do a good enough job where linebacker is not unimportant, but maybe it's less emphasized because you're going to be able to trust those four defensive linemen. And because you trust them so much, maybe you're playing more nickel because you don't need the linebackers to be in support as much. So maybe linebacker is just something which feels weird from a former former linebacker himself. Yeah. But maybe it's just a position they're de-emphasizing right now.
And honestly, that's why I feel like he's wants to play more 4-3 is because I'm stereotyping him as a linebacker that wants more linebackers on the field. Like,
well,
I'm not coming from a very educated place. Like, that's definitely a leap that I'm making and why I'm making that leap.
I mean, if DeMeco is that kind of, I don't know, cliche or old school mindset, and I don't think he is, then maybe
I don't either.
Maybe they look at a name like a true 4-3 middle linebacker, like no doubt, like a Bobby Wagner, somebody that's a veteran that could come in and it's cheap. But if the Texans don't make a move like that, then I think that's a sign that DeMeco is being willing to be more modern in his approach. And even though he's a linebacker at heart, not necessarily force the roster to fit like where his mindset came from.
Yeah. 713-780-3776. Get to this text. 2484. Am I the only one who feels comfortable with Tunsil, Patterson, Juice, Shaq, and Titus as the offensive line?
I mean, are you?
I want a left guard to compete minimum, and I'm okay with the idea. If you feel like one of these interior offensive linemen at 23 is by far the best player available, I'm doing that. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that's why I want to, in free agency, I want to take care of every offensive position. And it doesn't need to be like a superstar at every position. Like, I'm okay with Jeff Okuda being your starting corner going into the draft, being cornerback number two on your depth chart going into the draft. I'm okay-ish with a combination of Patterson, Kenyon Green being your left guard one going into the draft. But if you're in a spot at 23 where it's like, okay, interior offensive lineman, this guy's the best player on my board by far. He's not even close. Then I'm taking that interior offensive lineman and juicing the guy that I drafted or my center and my left guard. The same conversation with corner. Like, if I go into the draft and you know, Cooper DeJean is there at 23 and Nick Caserio has Cooper DeJean as the best player available, cool. Cooper DeJean's the pick and he's starting over Okuda and I'm figuring out left guard later. So I'm with the texture more. Like, I'm not comfortable with that. I feel like if you go into the season with this, you know, battle between Patterson and Kenyon Green, maybe you throw Kendrick Green into that conversation. They better get that right, because
yeah,
that's a position where I'm highlighting of like, okay, that's a concern of mine. That's a concern I have.
Yeah, I don't like that for a number of reasons. I mean, obviously, chief amongst them is Kenyon Green's proven nothing. But even if you, I mean, I like Juice Scruggs as a center, and I'm comfortable, obviously, I mean, obviously, with Laremy Tunsil left tackle, I'm comfortable with Shaq Mason and Titus Howard making up the right side of the offensive line. It's really just left guard. And DeMeco said it in the same press conference we referenced earlier as to when he said he wanted to improve the defensive front. He also talked about improving the running game. And I think chief amongst those concerns as far as improving the running game is improving left guard. Just what they had last year, while Patterson and other guys filled in admirably, it wasn't good enough. You can do better. So I'm with you. If I think there's really three positions where maybe even four, because I think you could throw wide receiver in there. But I'd be happy in the first round if they took it and let it fall to them for best player available. And that, of course, being defensive tackle, wide receiver, corner, and then offensive guard.
Texture says Kendall Fuller is a bridge option. Yeah, I would love Kendall Fuller as a bridge option.
Yeah,
he's fabulous.
Contract,
he's really good.
I'd be fine with
I think
that.
He's going to be, but I think he's going to get paid. I think he's going to outprice the Texans.
That's going to be the problem, because the Texans have now spent enough of their free agency money that I don't think the big splashy move, and maybe you don't qualify or classify Fuller as a splashy move, but I think they'd be out of the Fuller contract status at this point.
Yeah, I do too. I love him as a player, especially short term, but I'm with you. 713-780-ESPN. Blanker's out today. Wrong answers only. Where is Blanker's? 713-780-3776. When we come back, what are the final remaining questions for the Astros opening day roster? And I do have an opening day roster projection 4.0. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.